I think the Christian conservatives are a force to be reckoned with and could put anyone in office they wanted if they would get out and vote.
That's a common sentiment among Christians, especially in a political season, and all seasons are political nowadays. If Christians just, I hear this so often from Christians, if Christians just got out and vote, if the church just rose up and went to the polls and voted, they could basically write anyone's ticket to the White House that they wanted. It's a voice, common sentiment at the National Religious Broadcasters Convention in Orlando, Florida. It just came to a conclusion, and as they're meeting their national religious broadcasters, big and small, they attract those who would like to have their ticket written, or at least punched, by evangelical voters. Among them, four GOP candidates here in the first part of Audio Open Lines in the last hour of the program. We're going to be hearing a National Public Radio piece on the four who visited the National Religious Broadcasters Convention to be seen, to see, to make clear their views, to clear up any questions, and as the press has been saying, hoping to court the voters that National Religious Broadcasters claim to represent. We're coming to you live this Wednesday. It's February the 21st. Our call-in number is 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address issues, etc@kfuo.org. Before we get into that audio, I've been to NRB one time. When was this? Maybe 4 years ago? Time flies, doesn't it?
It was 2001.
How do you know these things? How do you remember these things?
I can't say why. It has to do with the personnel matter.
Oh, really? Okay. In any event, in 2001, Jeff and I made the pilgrimage, in this case, down to Nashville, to the National Religious Broadcasters Convention. We didn't have a booth. We didn't have any of those kind of things. We just went. I can't even really tell you why we went. Not that I won't tell you. I just don't know, but we did. We went to the National Religious Broadcasters Convention, and it is the who's who of Christian radio and television. I think standing in line for coffee one afternoon in the lobby of the hotel in Nashville where the convention was being held, in about a course of 10 minutes, we saw two guys behind me, Dr. James Dobson, and then sitting over on the couches, not looking like $45 million, the author of the Left Behind series that's earned that much, Tim LaHaye. Paul Crouch came in, sans Jan, but he had his entourage of nicely suited young men, his gauntlet of men that surround him wherever he goes, get a glimpse of him, and many others. It's a meeting place of both the glitterati of religious broadcasting and also the small-timers like me and Jeff. But it's also become a political venue. Over the last couple of years, it's become even more political, and in election years, it's really a political venue, especially as evangelical voters estimate their influence on politics. One might say perhaps overestimate their influence on politics, taking no chances. Four of the GOP contenders for the White House were in attendance. And here's the story from National Public Radio.
Republicans running for president know they have to talk about faith and values, and each candidate is trying his own approach. Here's the message of former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney.
Well, I think people in this country want a person of faith to lead them as their governor, as their senator, as their president. I don't think most people care what brand of faith they have.
Romney's challenge is that he's a Mormon. John McCain's challenge is that he attacked evangelical leaders the last time he ran for president in 2000. He's much more conciliatory this time around. McCain and Romney were among four presidential candidates who attended a convention of religious broadcasters this week in Orlando, Florida. Duncan Hunter was also there, Sam Brownback was there, and NPR's Rachel Martin was there.
If the evangelical vote is the key to the promised land for Republican presidential hopefuls, the network executives and religious leaders here are the gatekeepers, a very familiar role.
We've been to this dance about 30 times over the last 30 years. So.
Tony Perkins is the president of the Family Research Council.
This is the courtship period where we see candidates approaching with their positions trying to garner support, and, you know, we'll let that run its course.
There's not a clear frontrunner yet for the critical evangelical vote, and there are signs evangelicals may not be so pleased with their choices. Last month, James Dobson, the president of Focus on the Family, said he would not vote for Senator John McCain under any circumstances. And some evangelicals have raised concerns about Mitt Romney's Mormon faith. Stuart Epperson is the head of Salem Communications, one of the largest Christian broadcast companies in the country.
What we're looking for with people with character who are principled candidates.
Will they vote for principle over religious affiliation?
I believe so. They don't demand, by and large, theological compliance, but they do demand a certain amount of very sincere ideological compliance.
Epperson says when it comes to social conservative values, Romney is actually closer to evangelicals than other top Republican candidates. And even though Sam Brownback is a convert to Catholicism, he's got deeper ties in the evangelical world, the right stance on key issues like abortion, stem cell research, gay marriage, and he's not afraid to talk about it, as he does here in front of supporters at the convention.
I think we have to recognize, as we do, that all human life is sacred.
Amen. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. And our in-studio email address, we're listening to a National Public Radio piece here during Audio Open Lines about the Republican candidates, at least four of them, making the scene down at the National Religious Broadcasters Convention in Orlando, Florida this week. Brownback, John McCain, Mitt Romney, and Hunter. They're down there, and they consider it at least important this early in the race to show up there. The big question is, it's probably an advantage to go any place where you have potential voters. The big question is, which of them will be anointed and how much will that anointing count when it comes to things like primaries and the general election? Evangelical voters, as evidenced by the woman we heard in our open, think that if they just got up off their backsides and all voted as a bloc, they could write anyone's ticket to the White House that they want. We talked with John Green recently from the Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life, who's done the research, who's crunched the numbers, and he says not in the last couple of elections. They haven't been able to write tickets in the last couple of elections. And really, it wasn't the evangelical voters that made the big swing in 2006. It was Roman Catholic voters.
And every state.
That's exactly what people like Tammy Bennett want to hear. Dressed head to toe in silver, from her blazer to her boots, the 45-year-old mother of two stands out in this crowd. Bennett is the founder of Makeover Ministries, which she describes as
inspiring women to look good from the inside out, to be supermodels for Christ, and it's based on Proverbs 27:19 that says, just as water mirrors your face, so your face mirrors your heart.
By the way, I should say this. Something I didn't mention about our trip to the National Religious Broadcasters Convention is, while you will see the James Dobsons and the Tim LaHayes and the Paul Crouches there, and all of them represented in many broadcasters and television and radio, you will also find a lot of this. Makeover Ministries. A lot of Jewish organizations there, they know the politics of the thing too. They're there. They're not Christian Messianic Jews. These are just plain old Jewish organizations hawking for money and support from religious broadcasters, selling tours to the Holy Land, kind of the Christian version of the pilgrimage. And diet plans, oh my goodness. Publishers are there, of course. That's a smart business move. I was amazed how many diet plans and snack manufacturers were there with Jesus chips and things like this, Makeover Ministries. It is, in some ways, in that sense, a bit of a circus. Let's go to the phones here before we hear the rest of our package. DB is calling from his car. Hi, DB.
Hey, Todd. I think it was Mitt Romney's comment. I hope I'm quoting him right. But he basically said that evangelicals or religious people didn't. They wanted somebody from a moral background. They weren't concerned about what that faith background is. And I'm kind of curious to see what evangelicals are going to do in the primaries with someone like Mitt Romney, who's a Mormon, and whether they're going to vote for him You know, it's one thing to vote for him because they think he's a good candidate and they think he has the right political motivations, the right attitudes, or will they vote for him because they think, well, you know what, he's close enough to being a Christian. I'm really curious to see whether evangelicals will even make the distinction between Mormonism and Christianity and actually vote for him because they consider him to be quasi-Christian.
Christian-ish,
mm-hmm. Close enough, yeah.
That's a very interesting thought, DB. I agree that they've already said it there in the piece that we're hearing from National Public Radio. They're not so concerned about someone's theology. They're far more concerned about someone's morality when it comes to the issues of abortion and gay marriage. And in that sense, when it comes to who's going to be president, I think I agree. Now, we've never tried this before. We've never tried having a Mormon president before. We've had nominal everything, practically, as presidents, but we haven't had a Mormon, a heart and soul dedicated temple Mormon. Again, I don't know if Romney is a temple Mormon. When I say temple Mormon, I mean the observant Mormon, the one who's in the temples, done all the stuff, the true believer, not the periphery nominal Mormons who may have been brought in by the elders visiting their door and now they're Mormons, but they don't know if they're Mormons or Christians. I'm talking about the true believers who know what's what in Mormonism. We've never tried this before. We don't know what it would mean. It will be interesting to see.
But really, is there much difference between Mormonism and the liberals in the Episcopal Church USA or the United Methodist Church or the Presbyterian Church USA? I mean, what's the difference between, I mean, who's Bishop Spong?
You mean theologically?
Yeah, theologically.
Oh, no. I mean, they're, to put it in crassest terms, they're both going to hell, but if they really believe what they say they believe. But the difference for the evangelical, of course, will be that the Mormons are moral people. Although I've noticed that being a Mormon didn't keep Mitt Romney from being pro-choice for a long time. The whole opposition to gay marriage is no surprise, of course, because Mormons are all about marriage, but it didn't keep him from being pro-choice for most of his political career. But he is now, and I believe him, got no reason not to, he is pro-life now.
What messages, what ideas do you want to be hearing from presidential candidates?
One of the big ones I would like right now is just the sanctity of marriage. And I see that whole thing just falling apart in our nation, and families are the core of our nation.
Preserving the sanctity of marriage is a sticky issue for John McCain. Many evangelicals say even though he's got a consistent pro-life voting record, he won't get their vote unless he backs a federal ban on same-sex marriage. And many here haven't forgotten about 2000, when McCain railed against conservative religious leaders. So after hearing McCain speak in a closed-door session, the response from some, including Ricky File from Amarillo, Texas, was skeptical.
He's saying the right things to excite this kind of crowd that we're part of, but we've observed him too long to just, you know, fall for it, hook, line, and sinker.
Others said while McCain still has a long way to go in repairing his relationship with evangelicals, coming here to the Orlando conference was a good first step. Still, there is no candidate who reflects all the evangelical core values and who has a name and bank account big enough to win. Erwin Lutzer is the senior pastor at the Moody Church in Chicago.
Our options are rather limited, but at the end of the day, we have to vote for the candidate that best represents us, even if he or she comes woefully short of what we'd like to see.
And what about the candidates who didn't come to Orlando? As Tony Perkins of the Family Research Council described it, if they didn't even bother to show up at the dance, they certainly won't be invited out for a cup of coffee when the party's over. Rachel Martin, NPR News.
A little bit later in Audio Open Lines, we'll hear the exact quote from Tony Perkins on that issue, those who didn't show up at national religious broadcasters. I didn't know it was that important. I guess if I have any presidential aspirations, I need to start going again. I didn't know it was that important. Did Ronald Reagan go to the national religious broadcasters? I don't know. Did George W. Bush go? Yes, he appeared via satellite at least one of these things. They're held every year. course, he's not running again. I'd like your reaction to the Republican presidential candidates there at the National Religious Broadcasters Convention in Orlando, Florida this week, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, and our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. We've got more audio, an interview with one ministry leader who was there, and then there was a debate held. They had the likes of Barry Lynn from Americans United for the Separation of Church and State and Michael Newdow, now famous atheist, in a panel debate. We'll play some of that for you coming up here in a few minutes. Which of the four candidates that attended the NRB convention? McCain, Romney, Brownback, or the last one escapes me now. I'll remember it in a second. Which of those four do you think have the best chance of getting the evangelical vote? It appears from the story we heard there that Romney's running ahead. Maybe even Brownback. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or email us here in the studio, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Shane calls from his car. Shane, welcome.
Hey, Todd. Hey, Ronald Reagan was a faithful NRB attender. In fact, in 1983 at the NRB, he declared that year to be the year of the Bible. And I personally saw George Bush the first at NRB in 1990, so he was attending regularly as well. So that answers your question.
Okay, so as far as we can tell, and thank you, Shane, very much, Shane Rosenthal, who's producer of the White Horse Inn, and I think it probably attended more NRB conventions than he cares to admit to. So it is the place to go if you're ready to start the road to the White House on the GOP ticket. It's the place to be when the NRB is there. The big question is this. Which was more important, that Ronald Reagan was at the National Religious Broadcasters, that it was Ronald Reagan who was at the National Religious Broadcasters, or that it was Ronald Reagan who was at the National Religious Broadcasters? Do you see, can you catch my emphasis there? Which was more important? That he went and talked to a constituency that he would naturally talk to, or that he went and talked to this constituency? Now, there are some of the more political evangelicals who would try to convince us all that they are the ones who elected Reagan to the White House. They are the ones who elected George Bush to follow him. They had a hard time after that for 6 years, but they're the ones who put George W. Bush in the White House, and they're the ones who are going to put the next president of the White House on the condition that they all get out and vote. How many times have you heard this? If Christians would just get out and vote, then blank. Then we'd have in the White House whoever we wanted. So which of the four who attended there at the National Religious Broadcasters Convention do you think will get the vote? Acting on the assumption, and we'll hear this in a moment, from Tony Perkins, that if you don't show up there, you're not going to get their vote. Leave everybody else out. Of the four, it was, Jeff, help me out here. It was McCain, it was Romney, it was Brownback.
No, I can't.
And it was McCain, Romney, Brownback, and one other guy. Starts name
Hudson. Duncan Hunter?
Duncan Hunter.
From California. Yes. Congressman from California.
Okay, so those are the four that showed up. Duncan Hunter obviously going to be the dark horse here, since I can't remember his name. One thing you do need is name recognition. The big question asked at the end of the National Public Radio piece is, who has the vote, the name recognition, and the bank account to make this run for the White House on behalf of American evangelical voters? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Here are the names again. Which do you think will get that vote? John McCain, Mitt Romney, Duncan Hunter, or Sam Brownback? Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org, or will the spell be broken this time around and you won't have to have visited the NRB to make the White House? Those who didn't show up. Rudolph Giuliani did not show up. Who else is officially running here? Rudolph Giuliani.
Huckabee. Arkansas governor.
Yeah, former.
He's Southern Baptist pastor. Why wasn't he there?
Maybe he had.
What's he thinking?
I don't know.
Well, you know, there's still plenty of time.
He's actually an ordained Baptist minister.
There's still time. There'll be another NRB before the election.
Actually, that's true.
Who will be attending at the next NRB?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, the amazing thing is, 1 year from now, we're still going to be talking about this. Isn't that amazing? 1 year from now, we're still going to be talking about who's going to run for president. You know what? I've been reading. I love history. I've been reading a little history. And the very first candidate, very first presidential candidate ever to actually campaign for themselves, to go out and make speeches during the campaign season while running for president, was Douglas, who ran against Lincoln. He broke with tradition, and it was a major break with tradition, and he actually went out and stumped for himself. Lincoln, on the other hand, stayed home and let other people go out and do the stumping for him, which was considered to be the right thing to do up until that time. So here's Douglas out there stumping for himself. He loses the election to Lincoln. And I think that was the last time anyone stopped, said, I'm not going to stay home and I'm not going to go out. I don't think it was the last time, actually. It was considered a mistake because he lost the election. Well, now we not only expect him to go out and stump for themselves, we expect them to vote for themselves. That was also considered in bad taste. Most presidential candidates, Lincoln didn't even vote because it was considered in bad taste to vote for yourself. And he couldn't vote for the other guy. So now we expect them to stump for themselves, and we expect them to show up at all these things, either sincerely or insincerely. We don't care. We just want them there. And we expect it to start more than 2 years before the election. I think that the Lincoln-Douglas election, all said, was about 3 months long. And it was considered an interminable election season. A lot has changed. Pretty soon, as soon as the one guy's elected, the campaigns will begin for the next guy. Which, if you're a member of the House of Representatives, that's already your reality. It's audio open lines 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. And our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. Tomorrow we'll be talking about the temptation of Jesus. Scripture says that Jesus was tempted in every way as we are and yet without sin. How can it be? He was tempted in every way that we are and yet without sin. Part of the problem, and we'll discuss this tomorrow with Deaconess Pam Nielsen, is that we, because we're sinners, do not know what it is to be tempted without sin. But Jesus does, and he was for us. We'll talk about it in our ongoing series on teaching a Sunday school lesson with Deaconess Pam Nielsen. Also tomorrow, bright idea from earlier in the week, Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is going to join us to talk about this North Carolina woman who wanted to take her oath in a court of law on the Quran rather than the Bible. That's coming up tomorrow on Issues, etc. Ask and you shall receive. If you want Dr. Montgomery to come on and talk about that, we have it for you tomorrow. Our call-in number is 505-7850. 1-800-730-2727. When we come back, an NPR interview with one of those who were in attendance at the National Religious Broadcasters Convention in Orlando, Florida, the head of Inspiration Ministries. He's John Roos. And in this interview, he talks about the delicate balance between people who have, at least ostensibly, the duty of religious broadcasting and political ties. We'll be right back.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
The very statement that it is God's church ought to mean that our church then be faithful to God's word.
That's the voice of a former president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, the late Dr. J.A.O. Preuss, during the Lutherans' battle for the Bible in the 1970s. His words still ring true. A church that cuts itself off from God's word ceases to be the church at all. Go in depth into the primary sources surrounding the Lutherans' battle for the Bible with our Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for February, A Seminary in Crisis by Dr. Paul Zimmerman. To find out more about A Seminary in Crisis, call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, or visit our website, issuesetc.org. You'll find a seminary in crisis at our homepage, issuesetc.org. It's the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for February, a seminary in crisis.
It's a world full of disease. Is that very good?
Answers with Ken Ham, who's opening a large creation museum near Cincinnati, Ohio. Ken, how could you ever say the disease is very good?
Well, a little while ago, I went to my doctor for a checkup. He asked me what I did for a living, and I explained how I speak on the creation evolution issue. Well, my doctor said he went to church, but with his training in science, he realized that scientists didn't have all the answers. And so with Genesis, he just stands back and says he doesn't understand. So I explained to him, a medical doctor, about the evidence of cancer seen in fossils that are supposedly millions of years old. And I said to him, so when God stated that everything he made was very good, do you think the world was full of cancer? I then explained how death, bloodshed, disease, and suffering couldn't have existed before sin, so how could you believe in millions of years? As my doctor left the room, he turned to me and said, that bit about no disease and death before sin, I'm going to have to think about that. I haven't heard that before. That's very challenging. Christians should believe in the plain teaching of the Bible from its very first verse, that death and suffering are a consequence of sin.
Find out more about how believing in the book of Genesis helps explain why we see so much death, suffering, and terrorism all around us. Go to our website, AnswersRadio.com, for Ken's free booklet, Why Is There Death and Suffering? The booklet is free at AnswersRadio.com.
March 1st will soon be here, and that means the return of the Bible Study Repeat. Tom Baker's Law and Gospel program will continue to air from 1 till 3 daily, and the Bible Study Repeat will get underway at 6.05 p.m. So if you can't hear the Bible study during the morning, tune in during the evening. It all starts Thursday, March 1st, here on AM 850 KFUO, Inspirational Christian Radio for the World.
Dr. Jeff Gibbs of Concordia Seminary in St. Louis about why you should support LCMS World Relief.
There is such dire need. Americans are so parochial. We just think about ourselves. We were in Germany last year. The news is international, and you come back to the United States, and all we think about is ourselves. See? But the world is God's world, and God's compassion needs to go out. And LCMS World Relief is one of the great ways that people can actually take what they have and share it with tsunami victims and people starving to death, and they can do it knowing that it will be shared in the name of Christ. Christ will be glorified in LCMS World Relief, and that's why we should support it.
For more information about LCMS World Relief, go to our website, issuesetc.org, and look on the homepage for their logo, or call them at 314-996-1683. 314-996-1683.
This is the courtship period, where we see candidates approaching with their positions, trying to garner support, and we'll let that run its course.
But what about those who haven't bothered to come?
Well, they obviously won't dance with us. If you don't dance, we're not going out for coffee afterwards.
Tony Perkins of the Family Research Council talking about those presidential candidates or hopefuls in the GOP who didn't show up at the National Religious Broadcasters Convention this week in Orlando, Florida. Welcome back to Issues Etc. It's audio open lines for the last half hour. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850. Or 1-800-730-2727, or you can always email us, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Jim is waiting in his car. Jim, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, sir. I think it'll probably be John McCain coming away with the Republican nomination, but unless the Democrats really fall apart or get everybody angry, I've got a feeling they're going to win the presidency in 2008.
Do you think it's going to be John McCain getting the nod from evangelical voters? Will he be getting the evangelical vote?
McCain's kind of a tough guy to reconcile as far as the evangelical vote is concerned, but I think Sadly, I think what's going to happen is there's going to be some compromise thinking, well, he's the best chance we've got of winning the White House. And so that's how he'll end up getting it.
All right, Jim, thank you very much. What about the rest of you? Which of the four who visited the National Religious Broadcasters, assuming as many do, that it is a prerequisite for getting the evangelical vote, which of the four, John McCain, Mitt Romney, Sam Brownback, or, give me the name one more time, yes, Duncan Hunter from California, which of those four will get the nod from evangelicals? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, issues etc at kfuo.org is the email address. Some are more circumspect, some are more cautious when it comes to the political clout, the White House king-making ability of evangelical voters and of the National Religious Broadcasters Convention. One of them, John Ruse, of the religious broadcasting company called the Inspiration Network. Here's an interview with him from NPR.
We turn now to faith-based media. Today is the last day of the National Religious Broadcasters Convention in Orlando, Florida. The event draws not only thousands of conservative Christians, but also Republican presidential hopefuls. Four of them have visited the convention. And to give us a taste of the event, we're with John Ruse, and he's with the Inspiration Network based in Charlotte, North Carolina. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Well, you've been coming to this event for a number of years. What's different this time around?
I think people have recognized the importance of this marketplace. It is a large group of people. The religious broadcasters in general do speak to and speak for a large number of people. And I think what's happened certainly over the last presidential elections is a recognition of the power of this marketplace. And I think the reason that people have visited it is they recognize that they have to have the support of this group if they're going to be elected, at least within this faith-based community.
Now, four Republican hopefuls came in and met with people there, Mitt Romney, John McCain, Sam Brownback, and Duncan Hunter. Out of those four, which one do you like?
I think everybody is sort of torn in a couple of directions. One is that a number of people are cautious simply because there's still this uneasy alliance between faith and politics. The question of electability is important. The question of credibility is important. But I don't personally get a sense of any one person rising to the top. I think it's still too early in the game for that.
Well, is there something you specifically need to hear from someone like John McCain?
I think what we need to hear from McCain, as well as others, are their stands on the issues and their commitment levels. I mean, this is a group of people, particularly at this convention, and the people for whom we speak, who are concerned about things like morality, values, particularly with regard to their faith, with regard to their families. And I think there are a number of issues. Certainly the stand that McCain took about Roe v. Wade is an important one. And I know there was a great deal of buzz throughout the convention yesterday. McCain made some statements about his policy about that.
He says he wants the Supreme Court to overturn Roe v. Wade.
Right.
And you were happy to hear him say that?
Well, there are a lot of people who were very happy. I mean, that's obviously a subject of great interest to this marketplace because it's a quintessential issue in terms of whether or not you're in favor of values and integrity or you're really in favor of more expediency. And I think this is a marketplace that believes in the sanctity of life, and that's a very important thing. We all know the political ramifications of why this is an important issue.
But what about McCain's position on same-sex marriage? He has said he wants to leave it up to the states.
I think everybody has got issues. Obviously, Governor Romney has some issues that a lot of people really like what he says and like what he stands for. But, you know, there are still some concerns about, you know, his background.
Him being Mormon, is that the concern?
That's one of the concerns. So I think what a lot of people are doing is checking everybody out, getting a sense. And that's one of the good things about them being here at this convention is people have had a chance to meet them in person, to scope them out, to get a sense of, you know, eyeball to eyeball, and how convincing these people are, how truthful they are, what their integrity level is all about. And I think it's very wise of them to come here and meet with religious broadcasters and other people in this community.
John Ruse of the Inspiration Network, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So he's a little more cautious about saying we're kingmakers, and he's a little more cautious about stepping up and saying we're going to pick one of these guys, and whoever we pick is going to be the president. I mean, anyone who says that, you do have to ask the question whether or not they can back that one up with votes. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. It's audio open lines. Email us at issuesetc at kfuo.org. We're coming to you live this Wednesday, February the 21st. Now, if you're not familiar with the Inspiration Network, if you have cable, you probably have this. They carry people like Joyce Meyer. They're not the only ones who carry Joyce Meyer, but they're kind of a softer version of the Trinity Broadcasting Network. Joyce Meyer and, who else is on there? They also carry Charles Stanley and several others out there. Inspirational television, cable television, 24-hour network. So let's find out a little bit more about what some of the attendees at the National Religious Broadcasters Convention had to say. And as we do, we invite your reactions, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or issuesetc@kfuo.org. Just asking the simple question, there were four GOP hopefuls who showed up in Orlando among the religious broadcasters this week. They went, they had their closed-door sessions, they had their various meet and greets. They're hoping to garner the evangelical vote. Which of the four, assuming that you need to be there to get the vote, which of the four is going to get it? John McCain? Mitt Romney? He's a Mormon, but he's running very well. What's the other one? There's John McCain, Mitt Romney.
Duncan Hunter?
Duncan Hunter and Sam Brownback. Sam Brownback there also. All of them seem fair enough candidates. Do any of these candidates excite you? Or will they break with tradition and will evangelical voters, for whatever reason, go for someone who did not deign to grace them with their presence in Orlando yet? 1-800-730-2727 or 505-7850. 1-800-730-2727, 505-7850. This is Patrick Mahoney of the Christian Defense Coalition. His thoughts about John McCain.
He recognized the need to come down. He has in the past, in essence, shunned the faith community and the religious right.
That's true. And now he's trying to rebuild the bridge with evangelical leaders. So this isn't the first time he's come down saying, you know, I was hard on you guys before, but now I'd like you to consider me as a candidate. Would you? 1-800-730-2727 or 505-7850. This is Chris Slattery. He's I'm sorry. Not ready yet? Chris Slattery is the EMC Frontline Pregnancy Centers, and he likes John McCain and the fact that he was there at National Religious Broadcasters. We'll get to it here in a second.
The most important point is that he has a 100% pro-life voting record and a 0% record with NARAL and Planned Parenthood. And actions speak louder than words. If you're thinking of Mitt Romney, for instance.
I don't think he has a 100% voting record on the pro-life side. He did. John McCain, until this last year, had a 100% pro-life voting record. Then with the embryonic stem cell research, if you check with National Right to Life, he does not have 100% anymore. There still is also the question of gay marriage. He hasn't said he's in favor of gay marriage, but he doesn't want a federal marriage amendment in the U.S. Constitution, which is a problem for some evangelical voters. So one says he's really going to have to make up with us after being so hard on us 2 years ago. Other one says of McCain, no, the bottom line is he's got a pro-life voting record. And Mitt Romney, who's also running there, he's not as reliable on that thing, even though he's pro-life now. Let's hear from one more voice from this week's National Religious Broadcasters Convention in Orlando. This is the Reverend Bob Schenck of the National Clergy Council on Evangelical Endorsement of Presidential Candidates.
We're telling our people, be prayerful and careful about what you are hearing, because we know there's something called jailhouse religion. And there's something even bigger called Election Day religion.
You know, that's funny, because I thought the general sentiment down there was, we don't care about their theology, we care about them on the moral issues. I don't even see, according to Schenck's way of thinking, I don't see how Mitt Romney could ever get the evangelicals' voters. Because he's had religion a long time, it's just not the Christian religion. unless by religion he means coming over to our side on all the social and moral issues, it is difficult to tell. Here's another cut from 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, and our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. Mitt Romney does have a bit of a problem in the fact that he's a Mormon. How big of a problem it will prove to be remains to be seen, but there are some who are highly skeptical and for whom the fact that he is not a Christian makes a big difference. Listen to this.
A Florida retirement center. A heckler hurls insults at presidential candidate Mitt Romney.
And I want my testimony to read that I voted for a man who stands for the Lord Jesus Christ. And you, sir, you're a pretender. You do not know the Lord. You are a Mormon.
It's something Romney has heard before. His easy response won him a standing ovation.
One of the great things about this great land is we have people of different faiths and different persuasions. And I'm convinced that the nation does need to have people of different faiths, but we need to have a person of faith lead the country.
But Romney's faith will dog him. Although there are nearly 6 million Mormons in the United States, many Americans are confused about Mormonism. The HBO show Big Love doesn't help. It's a show about a man with 3 wives who lives in Utah. Many viewers assume this polygamist family is Mormon, but the Mormon Church outlawed polygamy more than a century ago. Perhaps the more nagging question is about what the Mormons believe about the Bible and Jesus Christ.
We believe in God, the Eternal Father, His Son, Jesus Christ, and then the Holy Ghost. Jesus Christ is at the center of it, and we believe He is the Son of God and the Savior and Redeemer of the world.
Still, the Mormon belief in Christianity is different. They reject traditional Christian beliefs about the Holy Trinity. For example, they feel God was a person, as well as Jesus. Some evangelicals call Mormons a Christian cult. Romney tried to change minds by inviting evangelicals to his home for some Mormon 101. He hopes the questions and the heckling will eventually go away.
I don't think faith will become a factor in the final analysis, but it may become an issue people talk about early on. But ultimately, they put aside those differences and focus on the capabilities of the individual candidates, their vision, their aspirations, where they take America, and why they're running.
I talked with Romney's campaign, who told me the comments about Romney's religion were the roughest yet. As for who won, well, they told me Romney got the standing ovation. Carol Costello, CNN New York.
I don't know what to read into that standing ovation. I don't, and I'll tell you why. If you got a standing ovation because the crowd there, contrary to the person who raised the issue of whether or not he really knew the Lord, that the crowd there said, that doesn't matter. What matters is, will he make a capable president, ergo the standing ovation? That's one thing. If the crowd there, contrary to the man who said Mitt Romney doesn't know the Lord, actually gave him a standing ovation because they think he does know the Lord, that's another thing. You know, the president of Fuller Theological Seminary got himself into some hot water last year when he went to Salt Lake City. He went with Ravi Zacharias, who went there making an apologetic presentation to the assembled Mormon leadership. But the president of Fuller Theological Seminary went there and said something even beyond that. He intimated, or many interpreted his comments to mean, that he considered Mormons to be quasi-Christian, close enough, Christian-ish, as one of our callers said before. Now, he caught a lot of heat for it, but not that much heat. So are the people applauding Mitt Romney because they think he's close enough? He might be a Christian. Mormons might be Christians. Or did they applaud because they don't think it really matters when it comes to who occupies the White House? Will it matter to you? Our call-in number 1-800-730-2727 or 505-7850. Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. Do you think that evangelicals will support Mitt Romney? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. He wants to be known as a person of faith. Doesn't matter what the faith is, as long as it's a person of faith in the White House. You know, if I were feeling brave in that audience, I might ask him after he's gotten his standing ovation, would that apply to a Muslim too, who can arguably be described as a person of faith? If it doesn't matter what the faith is, as long as the person in the White House is a person of faith, does it matter whether that faith would be Islam or Confucianism or New Age beliefs? I understand why he wants to be seen as a person of faith rather than a Mormon. And I understand his efforts to try and educate the people he wants to support him in what Mormonism is and isn't. He might discover that the more he exposes those people to what Mormonism is and isn't, the more objections they have to the faith that he holds to. The more they might question whether or not he is the person of faith they want in the White House. Well, religion in the public square was a topic for a roundtable debate at the National Religious Broadcasters Convention. These things are always a little fiery. They assembled a group of people who have a stake in national religious broadcasting and people who are more critical of the ends of the National Religious Broadcasters. One of the participants was Matt Staver, who's chief counsel for Liberty Counsel. Here's what he had to say.
Public acknowledgments of religion, whether by the government or free expression of religion by the people, does not establish a religion in the idea of the First Amendment. The establishment of religion is one thing. Public acknowledgments of religion are another.
So he's trying to make a distinction here in this debate, and we'll hear the rest of the respondents too. He's trying to make a distinction between establishing religion a la the U.S. Constitution, something that is not permitted by the U.S. Constitution, and simply allowing free expression of religious ideas. Now, the debate here is with people who would like to curtail at least the official, more or less, the official expressions of religious ideas like under God and the Pledge of Allegiance or the posting of the Ten Commandments. One of them, the Reverend Barry Lynn, who is, of course, Executive Director of Americans United for the Separation of Church and State. He says churches shouldn't seek government influence or seek government support.
Religious advocates should not cheapen their own faith by either seeking to garner the resources of government or turning their spiritual resources toward the end of supporting partisan political campaigns. Similarly, they should not expect that where moral suasion fails, they should demand that government enact their religious beliefs into legislative fiats.
Now, he raises two issues. One is whether or not a religious group sells out, essentially, to any particular political party. I did notice that there were no Democratic hopefuls visiting the National Religious Broadcasters Convention. They don't consider that necessary. Or perhaps they don't consider it possible. I don't think they'd be turned away. But the other issue he raises is whether or not people of a religious persuasion, if they don't get what they want by way of religious persuasion, try and make it the law of the land. I don't necessarily see anyone trying to do that. Here again is the Reverend Barry Lynn of Americans United for the Separation of Church and State on a particular issue, this of displaying the Ten Commandments. He says, a simple display of the Ten Commandments in courthouses or elsewhere doesn't make people good.
If proximity to holy words was all that made us holy, the fact that Gideons had placed Gideon Bibles in the hotel nightstands would have ended adultery a long time ago.
It's a clever comment. It really is. I mean, if posting the Ten Commandments somehow make the American people a more law-abiding people, then it would stand to reason that putting the entire Bible in a hotel room would keep people from using that hotel room for nefarious purposes. You've actually got the whole Bible in there, not just the Ten Commandments. Well, that's one side of the debate on the whole issue of religious expression. I think it's more heat than light, really, here. What do you think? 505-780, 1-800-730-2727. As one who makes his living in the business of public religious expression, I don't have anyone trying to stop me. I think it's unprecedented religious, the freedom of religious expression that we have at this point in history. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. And no, I don't consider taking under God out of the Pledge of Allegiance, curtailing my religious expression, because that God is a generic God. He's undefined. Mine is quite defined. Herman calls from Illinois. Hi, Herman.
Thank you for taking my call. There is a historical point of interest. About 100 years ago, in the early 1900s, there was a President Howard Taft won the presidency, and he was a non-Christian. He was a Unitarian. And there was concern in the campaign that this would become an issue, but he downplayed it. And in terms of doctrine, I'm sure that it's probably the same as Unitarians are, but the Unitarian Universalists are around today. Whether they were as flamboyant as Unitarians were at that time on a number of issues, I doubt. But there was a non-Christian president holding a term in the presidency, and that was Howard Taft.
Well, thank you very much, Herman. I appreciate that bit of... I had forgotten that about Taft. Of course, Taft was more or less tapped by his predecessor, Teddy Roosevelt. He was the natural. Taft wanted to be... He wanted to be the Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court. He didn't want to be president. Well, he was a Unitarian, which means he rejects the doctrine of the Trinity. Is this a parallel to Mitt Romney? Mitt Romney isn't a Unitarian. In fact, he's, technically speaking, if he is a thoroughgoing Mormon, he is a polytheist. Mormonism is serial polytheism. Or serial monotheism. One God, one planet. Everybody gets one. And Mitt Romney, if he believes what Mormonism believes, believes that he will one day be a God of his own people, his own planet, along with his wife or wives, as the case may be. I think he can marry after he attains godhood. And he wants to be president of the United States. Taft wasn't that bad. Of course, he didn't. He kind of came in after the party was over. Tomorrow on the program, we're going to be talking about whether or not a Muslim entering a U.S. court of law should and should be able to request a Quran upon which to lay their hand to swear their oath of truth. There are Bibles there for anyone else who would like to have the Bible. Should there be Qurans there for the Muslims who wish to swear in a court of law to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth on their holy scriptures? We'll talk about this with law professor Dr. John Warwick Montgomery. Also, we'll continue our series on teaching a Sunday school lesson. The temptation of Jesus will be the subject with Deaconess Pam Nielsen. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues Etc., please visit the audio archive section at KFUO.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM 850 KFUO. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.